From the bowels of the Guardians King's Place HQ, this is Media Talk, live-ish at the 2010 Changing Media Summit. Coming up,
we'll either archive it, we'll delete it, remove it altogether, or we'll consolidate it under bigger, broader products and categories.
BBC Internet Overlord Eric Huggers tells us about the cuts to the corporation's web offering. Also in the podcast, Michael Wolfe talks about the internet's next big thing, and
the schedule will continue to play a role. I think the way in which it's made available and into people's lives, whether that's mobile or onto PCs, is going to proliferate, but it's still, for a long time to come, the schedule has a role to play.
We go beyond the red button to discuss the next generation of TV, putting the media into mediocrity. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Well, how nice of you to join us at the Glastonbury and World Cup final of media conferences. We've got a packed programme for you this week with some of the biggest names from the industry, not least, of course, my partner in crime, Emily Bell, who is a former Cub reporter for Big Farm Weekly. Of course, that's your claim to fame. But now, merely Director of Digital...
Can I just say, that was the best job I ever had.
And now...
including this one.
Which is the Director of Digital Content at The Guardian. How have you been having fun at the Changing Media Summit?
No, I am the performing monkey, so I've not really had fun. I've been sort of dancing when the organ plays, but it has been. It's good. It's nice, engaged audience. Really good speakers. I always find, possibly because he's even more of a proponent of, you know, free content, and as he says, free as in speech, not as in beer, with Jimmy Wales and his sort of Wikipedia story this morning is very inspiring. So it's great to have people like that here talking about stuff.
Well, we haven't got Jimmy Wales, but we'll talk to more people like that later. But first of all, amid the hullabaloo over the last week about the proposed closure of Six Music, not much has been said about another important part of the BBC strategy review. Few tears were shed, and even fewer Facebook groups started up when Director General Mark Thompson announced the corporation was to halve the size of its website. Now, we know that that involves axing a quarter of online staff and reducing the £112 million web budget by a quarter, but details have been sketchy so far as to what the slimmed-down BBC.co.uk would actually look like. Well, Eric Huggers is the BBC's Director of Future Media, and he filled in some of the blanks.
We currently have around 400 top-level directories on the website, and we think that there is a real opportunity to focus on quality, distinctiveness, and focus on the five editorial priorities that we've set out in the strategy review and we've proposed to the Trust. And so what it will mean is that at the end of the day, there are certain web properties that are going to be very successful because they bring together the best of technology and the best of editorial.
So you're halving the number. So top level directories, that's / iPlayer, / news, that sort of thing, right?
You got it, yes.
Yeah. So where are you going to concentrate on?
Let's take this a step back. I think there are three lenses that we will use to sort through those top level directories. The first lens is, do these things meet the public purposes of the BBC? If the answer is yes, they go on to the next gate. The next gate is, does it fit with the new focus on the five editorial priorities? If the answer is yes, they go on to the next gate. And then the final gate, which I think is going to be a very important one, is the BBC measures itself and its services using a framework it calls RQIV, reach, quality, impact, and value for money. And if it meets those criteria, i.e. it scores well against reach, quality, impact, and value for money, it goes on to the final stage and survives. If it doesn't, we'll either archive it, we'll delete it, remove it altogether, or we'll consolidate it under bigger, broader products and categories.
So you can't tell us exactly today yet an example of a type of website that will be closing?
No, I think it's too early for that. Right. This whole process is out for consultation with the BBC Trust, sure. And so they need to first weigh in and have the license fee payer look at it.
It seems to me then that given that and everything else that you've announced, applications on the iPhone, you've said as well that the BBC, you know, the principle, you know, almost in... outlined a vision that the principal method of delivery of the BBC will be online in the future, that the BBC's ambitions in this area are far from being limited, they're being expanded. This is the criticism, isn't it, that your rivals put to you?
No, I don't think that's true. I think the ambition is just a natural outcome of where the world of technology is leading you. So if the internet, it becomes the third platform that 88% of the UK population uses on a daily basis, whether that's on a connected TV, whether it is on a mobile phone, whether it's on a PC, wherever they may use it, you know, at that point, you know, does it become realistic for the BBC to say, this may one day, not tomorrow, one day, become the sole platform and service for all of the BBC's output?
Eric Hugger's there, and if he sounded in a bit of a hurry, it was probably because he had to catch taxi again. Emily, in joke there, yes.
I know, in joke, yes. Eric's taxi bill, we didn't see him leaving a taxi. I think I saw him getting on a bus.
What did you make of what he had to say? I mean, you know, he's talking about world domination for the BBC, practically.
Yeah, I mean, the tone of it was quite interesting, given that the BBC has generally wanted to adopt a slightly sort of public sackcloth and ashes, crouch and brace position. And actually, he was coming out and saying, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be on every platform where we, you know, the subtext of that was where we can dominate it. So there's a very good question about, well, hang on a second, but Canvas, there's lots and lots of kind of IPTV standards out there, which is a Sky's argument. So why are you doing this? You know, which, and he was like, well, we've always done this. But then when talking about social media platforms, he said, of course, we would never attempt to replicate Facebook. So you think, okay, so the platforms where you think you can dominate the market, you will do, and the platforms where you don't stand a hope, you won't do, which is interesting. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying it's quite front foot. The really interesting thing for me, though, about this whole smoke and mirrors around how big should a website be is that...
Because it is smoke and mirrors, though. I mean, this idea that they're going to get rid of 200 top-level domain names, you know, that he was talking about in that clip that we just heard, that is totally smoke and mirrors. It doesn't mean you're going to halve the size of your website.
No, because it's like, how big is a website? How long is a piece of string? You know, are they talking about kind of like volume and frequency of output? Are they, you know, what? How do they measure that? Are they talking about pages that index? Interestingly, about 5 years ago, the BBC had a really, really major internal and not published review of its web strategy, which is a Web 2 strategy for the BBC. One of the key recommendations in that document, my understanding is, because I don't think it was ever made public, but, you know, I've seen evidence to...
Hope your sources are good.
My sources are very good. I believe that one of the recommendations in that was that the website had lots and lots and lots of areas of content which were not being updated, which were sort of substandard in terms of content or becoming irrelevant. And it identified around 250 content areas or sites that needed to be shut, and that was in 2006. So
who's found a strategy document at the bottom of somebody else's drawer then?
Yeah, and well, I mean, or you know, is this just a re-announcement of something the BBC decided to do 4 years ago, 5 years ago for its own health, but has now been kind of publicly announced as a new policy? Or did they actually go ahead and close those areas of content? I don't think they did. You know, so I do think from that point of view, it is smoke and mirrors. It's sort of meaningless. And I think the other thing which needs interrogating, sorry, you've now got me on a hobby horse, Matt, and I don't think that the BBC shouldn't invest in the web. I think it's great that they do. But they talk about cutting the budget by 25% of bbc.co.uk. And the budget line for bbc.co.uk is with content and vision. Eric Huggers' budget line, if in FM&T, is...
Future Media and Technology,
is actually a completely separate budget. So is that also going down by 25%? Because my understanding of it is that that's going to, in some areas, grow. So if that's kind of growing in some areas, what are those areas and what's the impact? I mean, you know, the BBC is launching... He made a very kind of bold set of statements, which I thought were very interesting for the current management. It's very challenging to the current management of the BBC. Just about how you had to have a deep and profound understanding of existing technologies in order to, you know, be effective in this area, which I just thought that's interesting. Is that something that the board of management of the BBC in general sort of agree with? And I think he was sort of hinting that, you know, well, he wasn't even hinting. I mean, he was sort of
stating it boldly.
Stating boldly that, you know, we want to be on all of these platforms and we want BBC content in front of everybody on all platforms.
Well, take for example. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
take for example.
You know, but where's the statement of public service purpose? Where is it? Because we've sort of lost that.
Yeah, but Eric Hungers, you can't say that he wears his public service heart on his sleeve.
Well, you know, he's probably a very effective... he is a very effective executive who came from Microsoft, whose background is in software, you know, software sales. Now, which is, but it's interesting because the BBC will have to make its mind up about whether the distribution, that's the distribution part of its business, but it is intimately linked now to the content creation part of its business.
Well, because, and also I got the impression that he doesn't really appreciate the argument that's being made against the BBC, whether you agree with it, you know, or not. I think you have to understand it to deal with it, and if you don't understand it, it's dangerous, because he dismissed the argument, for example, about the iPhone app, the BBC's iPhone apps, completely out of hand, and said, oh, this is just content that we've always done and we're just repurposing it for a different audience, when in fact there is a nuanced argument there about that actually in this area about iPhone apps there are media organisations, Declaration of Interest, The Guardian, which have started to make money out of paid applications here.
But you know, with full Declaration of Interest now, which is, you know, obviously, kind of, we produce an iPhone app, we get people to pay for it. The BBC enters that market with a free app. That's going to make it more difficult for anybody else to pay. Yeah, and it is nuanced, but there's also kind of something pretty fundamental here, which is even at website level, the BBC has always been a broadcaster. And when it hasn't broadcast and it's packaged content and sort of charged for it, so its magazine business, for instance, it's kind of always ended up in very hot water and being rained back. Now, the apps business, Eric Huggins is right that the BBC has always been in this business, but when it's repackaged content and sold it into existing markets, and this is not a broadcast model, this is a download model, this is different, this is not broadcasting, it is an intervention in a nascent but nevertheless existing market. And you can't just, my feeling is it puts the BBC in an odd position if you've got your director of future media and technology just saying this isn't an issue.
All right, well, pause for breath, because it's time to say, it is time. No, not.
Has everybody switched off, do you think, now? They're all gone. It's just Eric Huggins is left listening.
Yes, well, anyway, we'll hope not. Hope they're still there, because it is time now to say hello to the delegate who's travelled the greatest distance to be here at the Changing Media Summit. It's Michael Wolfe. He's Vanity Fair's media columnist and the co-founder of the Newser website. He's also written a recent biography of Rupert Murdoch called The Man Who Owns the News. We'll get on to the Murdoch dynasty with Michael shortly, but we started off by asking Michael whether the biggest media recession in history could be reconciled with his optimism for another internet boom.
Well, I think that they do, and I think one of the things that happens is the worse it gets in the media world, the more necessary it becomes to find a safe haven, or there's finding yourself with nothing to lose, so you step off into the unknown future. And so I think that the rush to the digital side is as intense and as fast as I've seen it in a long, long time.
In Britain, we often look at America as the canary in the coal mine. What happens there happens here 6 months or a year later. So what's happening there now?
Or even longer. I mean, for instance, the newspaper business is finished in the U.S. It is not here. I mean, and I think you probably have another chapter, 5 years, 6 years. But it will happen. You know, the newspapers. You know, newspapers are an unsustainable technology, and so you will encounter here exactly what we are encountering in the U.S. right now, which is literally the end of print.
So bad that you can predict when it's going to happen on any individual newspaper almost.
Absolutely. I mean, it is literally happening right now, that there is no newspaper, no big city newspaper, which has a plan for, an effective plan for survival. And in every instance, the only plan for staying in business another year is to drastically cut expenditures.
You predicted a big war between Facebook and Google. According to one metric, Facebook overtook Google this month. How is that going to play out?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that they both want to be the ubiquitous platform for everything that happens in this medium. So invariably they come into conflict. When you say platform means really, I'm going to be the dashboard. I'm going to be your method of navigating this this medium. I'm going to be your homepage. You know, I think that they go head to head. Obviously, Google is making efforts to get into the social network business, which are a little reminiscent of the efforts that that Microsoft made to get into the internet business.
Meanwhile, back in old media, Rupert Murdoch says he's going to be the savior of newspapers. You know him moderately well. You're one of his biographers. How long is the Murdoch view of the world sustainable? Because I mean, I heard him speak about a month ago, and he's not sounding that great.
As I say, it's just the Murdoch view of the world is sustainable at News Corporation as long as his shareholders tolerate it, and his principal shareholders are his children. I would say their patience is not limitless. So I
you predicting a family coup?
You know, this is a complicated family, and they love their father dearly, and he just infuriates them every second of the way.
Because
he won't leave. I mean, it's really basic. We all have parents. But he, more than most parents, just won't go, won't step aside, insists on imposing his view of the world, which is an old view of the world. The man is, 79. He's your grandfather. And it's unrealistic, I think, to assume that he can figure out the next stage of this business.
So he's what? He's not relevant.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not relevant is a kind way of putting it. I mean, he literally rejects the idea that there is this this technological transformation is occurring.
What excites you about the media business now, Michael? Is it people like Rupert Murdoch? What gets you up in the morning and says to you, I want to be a media commentator again today?
Not just the transformation, just that nobody's in control, that nobody knows what the hell is going on.
It's chaos.
It's chaos, because out of chaos comes opportunity. It's trying to create the necessity to create something new is great fun.
Michael Wolff there, fascinating stuff from him. Now, listen, right at the start of the program, we heard Eric Huggers say that in the future, the internet would become the main platform for distributing the BBC's content when it comes to delivering television. So just what does that mean in terms of the possibilities for program makers and content providers when it comes to the next generation of the red button? Ben McCohen-Wilson is the director of online and interactive at ITV, and he's speaking to producer Ben Green.
Ben, ITV is, of course, built on huge events, big brands. We've got the World Cup coming up, we've got X Factor coming, and God help us, you've just signed Pineapple Studios. Tell me how I'm going to be watching them. What's the experience going to be like in, say, 10 years' time?
All the evidence has been in the last few years that big event television is getting stronger as a power in people's lives, uniting, giving, delivering, certainly in the UK environment, national events around which people can unite. So last year, X Factor up 25% year on year. What we are seeing already is that viewing taking place on different platforms. That's only going to increase. But the desire to watch that piece of content at the time that it's current and talk about it with your friends is only going to be made stronger by these new media.
So give me an example. What's the World Cup going to be like?
So World Cup this year, is absolutely going to be about watching on the big main screen, unless, of course, you're in the office, in which case we'll be streaming them live on ITV.com. And for a lot of viewers, that will be their only experience of it. But if you're watching on the big screen, we're going to be putting more content, additional content available to you whilst you're watching that show on air, whether that's a chat around the game with your friends, Facebook Connect, or whether it's around sharing other data or clips in match around the game.
Is Louis, is Simon Cowell, are these people, are they going to be in 3D anytime soon?
I think 3D is in its very, very early stages. We're absolutely, you know, you'll see us experimenting with some 3D productions over the course of the next 12 months, but it's a very early stage, both for consumers in terms of whether it has any value in home, but also in terms of production costs, especially on big shows. What you are going to see over the next, you know, sort of 2-3 months is a huge amount of HD content, and I think viewers are only beginning to get used to the impact that has on the quality of viewing. You see that, you know, from start of April rolling out across Freeview, across Freesat, and across Sky.
Catch up VOD proved to be enormously popular. How far are we away from you doing away with the schedule altogether?
I think the linear schedule has a role to play in people's lives for a long time to come. Not just because event programming isn't just about live event programming. It's the sort of programming around which people schedule their lives. You know, whether it's the soaps, whether it's a 9 o'clock drama on a Monday night on ITV, whether it's Champions League football 8:45 on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, whether it's X Factor final on 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. These are the things that actually shape people's real lives. Same thing with daytime television. The schedule will continue to play a role. I think the way in which it's made available into people's lives, whether that's mobile or onto PC, is going to proliferate. But it's still, for a long time to come, the schedule has a role to play.
That's what the future of television looks like then. And for this final segment, I've been rejoined by Emily Bell. Can you imagine, I don't know, the next generation of MasterChef?
Oh, I'd like to. Do you think it would be foam-free? I don't want to see food. I'm turning into my mother. I don't like food in piles. Can I just say that? Why would you put your food in a pile? It seems that was totally unnecessary to me. Pork pie and a pickled egg do very nicely. I do love MasterChef, though.
I know you do. Are you a Come Dine With Me fan? I can't remember.
There isn't time in my busy schedule for Come Dine With Me yet.
I was just astonished. It won Best Off-Peak Programme at the Royal Television Society Awards this week.
It's that Best Off-Colour Programme, yes. Probably.
Now, listen, we should sum up what we've learned today at the Changing Media Summit. You go to lots of these conferences. You have meetings about these issues every day of the week. What are our takeaways?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that there's so much sort of coalescence. Whilst there's a lot of divergence of opinion about things like business models and what next, there's a kind of a sort of a coalescence around a couple of issues which are really, really key. One of which is understanding how to make the best use of technology and whether your company is really equipped to do that, which has been a theme running through all of the sessions in a way.
Well, it was very interesting that Michael Wolff, in his session, he didn't say it in his interview with me now, but in his session, he said that the key skill that you have to have in a media company is the ability to talk to your technologists.
That's absolutely right. He said you have to be able to talk to them. Eric Hugger said in his presentation you have to have a deep understanding of these technologies and what they mean if you're going to lead this kind of stuff. You know, if you like kind of, you know, legacy media businesses, there's an issue there. And I think that was very interesting. But also, the other thing which I felt quite optimistic about was I think there was quite a lot of talk about, you know, here and there and everywhere, there was a bit of talk about creativity, that people are sort of quite excited about things like, you know, the iPad or the iPhone or the e-reader or the, you know, semantic web or the possibility, sort of next possibilities for real time and social media. They're sort of excited in a way that kind of 3 or 4 years ago they were slightly worried about them. And I think that that's good. So I feel, you know me, I'm glass half full, even when I've drunk it all.
Well, I noticed that I think at these events now you can tell the level of media cutbacks that the organisation putting on the event by the lunch menu. And you were only allowed one main course. You could only have fish cake or mushroom stroganoff or lasagna. You weren't, as producer Ben, or he is usually wants to do, you weren't allowed to fill your whole plate up with everything.
Well, I should think not. I mean, can you imagine all those on one plate? Can you imagine what Greg would say? Your flavours are all over the place. Can I just say, I had my lunch in my office, and it was a cup of salty water with herbs in and some beans at the bottom, which I think was soup.
Is this your new diet? Emily and I will be back in the studio next week, where we'll be joined by internet guru, that's his official title, Clay Shirky, professional Australian Stephen Brook, and a special mystery guest. You'll have to tune in to find out. If you want to give your feedback on anything you've heard this week, head to our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells, and from all of us, and I do mean all of us, at the Changing Media Summit, happy podding and goodbye.